The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It is just turning 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 8th of September, isn't it? 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And as always, we've got plenty to keep you informed and entertained over the next 3 hours. So hopefully you'll stick with us, and we kick off as we always do on a Friday, looking in a bit more detail and behind the headlines of some of the big stories of the day and week. And we do so with a panel, and we've got another panel with us, and it's a cracker as usual. I want to say good morning first to Emer McGuinness, who is manager of the Donegal Mart. Good morning, Emer. How are you keeping?
I'm very good, Greg. How are you?
It's good to have you with us. I'm good. We also have Suzanne Rogers, journalist course director at Northwest Regional College. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning. And it is a good morning.
Isn't it? If you like the weather, for sure. And Seamus McDade, managing director of Football Special. As anyone watching will see from the branding, do you sleep in branded gear, get up in branded gear?
Part of the contract, Greg.
It's okay. Well, it's good to have all three of you on board. Might start off with a farming one, and we'll go to you first, Emer, if that's okay. So we learned yesterday that a new limit on nitrogen for farmers is set to impact 3,000 dairy farmers unless they reduce their herd or acquire more land. This hasn't come out of the blue, but it was sort of announced after a short call, a video call, I understand, between the Minister for Agriculture and his European counterpart. But here we go. So what's your take on this, Emer? What kind of an impact will it have? And of course, where dairy farming is more centralised, it's going to have more of an impact, but we're not going to escape it up here.
No, we won't. What sort of impacts are going to... It's obviously, as you've seen yesterday and you see the demonstrations that took place and the anger that's out there, it's going to have massive impact on farmers. And it will have an impact on us up here because... The way it basically is they either export their slurry, reduce their numbers, or get more land. So at present, what you have is, and what has been happening, dairy farmers, in order to keep within this derogation and keep within their limits, they have been looking for more land, which has driven the cost of land up massively up here. So they have to spread themselves out. And that in itself will be problematic in dealing with this, the new rules and regulations that will be in place. Because if you have some land in a designated zone where you have to decrease and increase, and you have land in another, you know, what category do you fall under? That's one of the problems. There's many problems. I suppose the farming organisations would say that from looking and listening to them over the last day, they were hoodwinked, that they weren't kept up to speed by the department on what exactly this would mean and when it was going to happen. Whereas the minister is stating yesterday that this was a public document. They all knew it was coming. The EPA report that was done initially was damning and that the water quality had to improve. And that is why that they set up this working organization, for water control. But we're in the situation. We didn't do anything to deal with it in the last year. Who is to blame and who is not to blame? You know, there's loads of reports. What do we do about it? What my views on it would be, this shouldn't be the end of it. We do have to protect our farmers. The minister will have to go back again. I know he says we can't, and I know we do have to deal with the situation. But if it's a case that the farming organisations didn't know this was happening, we have to be allowed the time.
That's what some of them are saying. There's some are saying that we've been making inroads here. We are reducing, pollution and what have you.
Reducing.
We can't really determine what is farming pollution versus what is runoff from sewage systems or lack of action from Isk Éireann. You should have given us a year or so we could actually quantify the impact rather than. But the alternative argument is, I suppose, that we are one of only three countries that get a derogation in this area. And the battle now is to retain the 220. You know what I mean? So, in other words,
I don't agree with that. You know, the battle is, we didn't know we had a battle, I suppose, until, was it March this year? This working organisation was set up in June. We have not been allowed, and we have seen it is decreasing. They hope by 2030 that will be down to 20%, whereas it's 46% or something now at the minute. So it is working. It is going to take time, though, and we have to be allowed that time. Greg, it brings me back to the same old story. We have to make all these changes, and that we're trading with countries that are doing absolutely nothing.
And the way in which we do, the argument is that we rear our animals in an environmentally friendly way. Yeah. That you're not rewarding that because no. Other countries that do it in a very different industrialized way, they're getting off scot-free. So it then starts to say, well, is it really about just reducing the level of farming in this country? Because then, of course, people are going to throw in the climate change situation and on top of the farmers' backs.
The farmers have been kicked left, right and centre. And, you know, it seems like the farming organisation, I was actually talking to one of the farm organisation yesterday in relation to another issue that will concern Mark, and they were hoodwinked in that. They were not told about it coming from the department. So it seems that this is the same case as what has happened here. They hadn't been kept up to speed. They hadn't been told what had happened. They were told too late. They have started acting on it, and they need that time. And it's up to our government to get us that time. You can't basically put farmers, it's not just farmers. We have, and if you are going to tell them that they have to lose and reduce their cow numbers, there needs to be something put in place. Basically, what I think they've decided is this is the road they're going to go. We are going to run with this. We have to at some stage. That's the way they look at it. So we're going to do it now, and we're going to see what will happen and get everybody to row in. But, you know, they're not really thinking of the farmers behind the scenes.
Yeah, and there's another issue too here is, before we bring the other guests in, it is a consolidation, really, because the big guys will probably be able to acquire the land, you know, from those around them, maybe the smaller operators, to retain their herd numbers. So on the face of it, you would say, well, look, at the herd numbers are the same. We told you wouldn't reduce the national herd. But that will not tell the full story of the group of farmers that are going to be legislated out of it, that and all the problems that creates from that, borrowings against what they have, passing it down to other family members, all that type of stuff. So on the face of it, the herd numbers might stay the same, but that will not tell the full story, and history might forget the full story as it tends
well,
to.
Well, I think that's basically what, from a lot of what I've seen this morning, that the full story will not be told, that this is not going to correct the problem with our climate problems in this country, that if they see, and the EU sees, that this the water does improve, that they're going to say, well, keep reducing. There's all these things you're facing, and you're not actually correcting. I do agree we need to protect and we need to look after our environment. I have no problem doing that. But when you see that the reports are coming in and that the water quality is improving, like, are the dairy farmers completely to blame? We haven't had time to look at all these things. Mm-hmm. And I think we need that time, and we're entitled to that time. And that's my view. Yes,
all right, okay. But these changes are coming in. Is it the first? It's the start of, next year, effectively. So, to comply, farmers have to make serious changes seriously quickly. So, Suzanne Rogers, there is this sense, I suppose, that, you know, is Ireland going to be a country for agriculture into the future? Have you any views on this?
Well, I wouldn't claim to have any expertise in this area, I have to say, but I did have a look at some of the issues that are involved. And the things that strike me are that exactly what you've said, it's not as though there are vast tracts of land in Donegal suitable for dairy farming that are not being utilised now. So if farmers are having to acquire more land, then obviously the herd numbers are probably going to stay the same. And as you alluded to there, the smaller families, the farm families, are maybe going to be pushed out in that. And that is going to have a huge impact on society and on the traditions, you know, in Donegal, a rural farming county. So exactly, you know, there's the the social kind of aspect of that as well. You know, there's the personal aspect that has to be looked at. Look, we all need and want clean water. Everybody is entitled to that. Farmers are not outside of that. That's what they want to. And it strikes me very much that there wasn't enough consultation, that there was a capitulation to this EEC or EU directive without talking to the farmers. And farmers are reasonable people by and large. They're normal people trying to make a living, trying to make a life for themselves. And they don't want to do it at the cost of the environment, because most are very strong environmentalists. And it strikes me that we haven't looked at alternatives enough. Now, looking around, and I was looking at New Zealand. Now, I know New Zealand's very different from Ireland, but they had this issue as well. And what they did was they looked at alternative crops, things like clover and corn and that kind of things that are not using high concentrates of nitrates, in order to reduce that dependency on nitrates, nitrogen, that kind of thing. So, you know, my take on this is that put the brakes on, talk to the farmers, they're reasonable people, consult with them. See what the way forward is, and don't do it in a knee-jerk reaction.
Is it not the case, though, maybe, Suzanne, that that might be trying to sort of flex and show a bit of resistance or what have you? But is it, the truth be told, when it comes to matters of fishing and farming, we have no say in it at all whatsoever. We have given all of that control over to Europe.
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, we still have wriggle room. And OK, they're talking about quotas and things like that. But there are ways to achieve the outcome which the Nitrates Directive has set out. There are ways of achieving that, or getting close to it at least. Not by coming in and saying, you will do this, we're not having that, you're going to have to reduce your herd numbers, or you're going to have to get more land, or you're going to have to do this or that. There are ways of achieving that in cooperation and in consultation. And as I say, farmers, I think for the vast majority of farmers, are environmentalists themselves. Mm. They mm-hmm. want what's best for the environment. They want clean water. They, you know, they want sustainability. And it appears to me that there just hasn't been that respect for the farming community.
Well, I can think of a number of situations where water is being damaged by not agriculture, other commercial activities. And we as a state are pumping untreated poo into the sea. Like, I wouldn't be crude or put anyone off their cornflakes, but that's the bottom line. And another thing too, Seamus McDade, what I see is maybe the last generation of really smallhold farmers that kind of just about hung out when the fertilizer prices went through the roof, that make up and are a very rich tapestry and part of local communities. And I think they're scattered all across the region. And I think they play a very important role. And I think they are part of who we are as well, of course. That's a given. But I really do feel it's that talking to them, the last generation, they don't see anything, no agriculture future for their children. I think that's going to be really, really sad. And I think it's going to be felt just on a really personal level in lots of different villages and communities around the country. But of course, our focus is on the Northwest here.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point you've made, Greg. I mean, I remember when I studied agricultural science in secondary school 15 years ago, you needed something like a 50-acre farm to make a minimum wage. And in the 15 years since I'm out of school, I'm sure that that is a much higher number now. The reality is the small family farm is going to become extinct in this country. And the government have made a policy decision that they are quite happy for that to happen. So while all these things, Emer has said it well, all these different policies that they've brought in have all been just a snow, another cut to farmers, another thing to make it harder to farm. And I think as a society, we needed to have a conversation about, well, what societal benefit do small family farms have, and what the ecology of, I mean,
we could go back before you continue. We could go back to the time of the pandemic. All of a sudden, farmers were the heroes, and farmers had this solution, and farmers had that solution, and farmers can do this, and all the other stuff that's lumped on farmers' backs was forgotten because we can do this. And now here we are back again. You know, that moment has passed, and now it's about the climate, it's the farmers, it's about the water quality, it's the farmers, it's about the treatment of the animals, it's the farmers, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a real, you know, a real issue in this, in the in government policy between farming and sort of what becomes of export. So there's lots of government ministers who like to talk about how we're the biggest exporter of baby food in the world, but don't like to acknowledge that there's some dairy farm that has to go into the baby food. There's a commercial into this segment about Murphy's ice cream and Dingle using Kerry milk, but not acknowledging that there's dairy farm that has to go into that. There'll be loads of ministers that want to come to Killigordon to cut cords, to cut ribbons if there was a new bottling facility going into Donegal Creameries, but no acknowledgement that then there has to be cows out in the field to create the milk, to create that. So, yeah, as a country, we're good at dairy farming, and unfortunately, the EU has decided there's not going to be dairy farming in the European Union anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, if you told French farmers there wasn't going to be grape growing anymore, there would be a much bigger revolt. But as you said, Greg, we just take verbatim what the European Union says to us, and there's no resistance there.
Yeah, and I mean, all of this for all the right reasons, people would argue, but we're going to find ourselves in a situation, Emer, finally to you, where we don't really know precisely what is actually polluting the water. Are we going to start from an environmental perspective, importing more meat? I mean, rather than creating it in a sustainable way locally. I mean, no one has successfully explained all that to me, and I'm a logical thinker, and I'll go along with it and I'll buy things.
Well, they haven't explained it to you, Greg, because they haven't actually gone into depth and tackled the problem yet. They've only just made a start to it. And that's why that process has to be allowed to develop. And as you say, who is polluting the water? Is it the dairy farmers? I'm sure that, yes, they are part of the problem, but I do not accept that they're fully. And, you know, we're talking about dairy farmers there, and we mightn't have too many of them up here. From Mart's point of view, and we have a Mart's organisation where all the Mart's in the country meet. And we had a meeting less than a few weeks ago. And there is a massive, we have already seen the decline in sheep farmers and suckler farmers throughout the country. It is huge, and it's coming really fast now. And from dealing with a lot of them problems, and that's our role as Marks, obviously to stay in business, we have to look at all the problems. It's coming so fast, and it's the cost of everything. It's the red tape for a start, but we've always had red tape. It's all these different schemes, what you have to do to get into these schemes. It's so much harder to draw down on the grants that the government now, you have to test for this and test for that. And it all seems to be in order to say that the EU require them and all these different markets require them. But sometimes it seems like it's just to keep people in jobs here. And it's impossible to fill out a form now without taking for somebody to get it filled out.
Yeah, okay.
And the costs are of feed everything as drastically increased.
Yeah, and then sometimes you just wonder. And
it's very
just
sad.
In this area, is there a policy of we'll try and ask for forgiveness rather than permission, and that permission being consultation? Okay, back with more from our guests after this quick break. We heard that the government is to review speed limits. Now, we don't know how that's going to work. We don't know how long it's going to take. It might be 2025. We don't know the logistics of it and what roads may actually see a decrease or not. But generally speaking, 100 down to 80, 80 down to 60. Now, I think we all know some roads that have an 80 kilometres sign on them, and you wonder what's going on there. Of course, then the councils will be able to vary them up or down as they can now, but this will set a new baseline. I'll go to you first, if that's okay, Suzanne Rogers, a journalism course director at Northwest Regional College. Do you think this is an area that requires focus? Do you think it will make a difference? And ultimately, of course, what we all want is to reduce as much as possible the carnage on our roads.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We're looking at 127 deaths this year so far, and we're only in September, 23 more than all of last year. So yes, obviously speed limit is one of the things, but I think there needs to be a holistic approach to this. It's not just about that. If you drill down a little bit into those stats, the people under 35 account for a third of all deaths. And that leads me to think, okay, well, when did you get your driver's license? And there's a huge discrepancy between where you sit your test and your chances of passing. right across Ireland. And you would expect that there would be a difference of maybe 1 or 2%, you know, given on local conditions and that sort of thing. But actually, the difference is between 72% and 49%. If you sit your test in Sligo, you're 72% chance of passing. And if you sit your test in Finglas in Dublin, it's 49%. There's something wrong there. There is a lack of consistency. And I would be kind of saying we need to come back. Speed is definitely one thing, but with speed becomes education. Drivers need to be educated as to what effect does it have if you're driving too fast, if somebody has decided in an area that this is the speed limit. And we all know that if you're going a little bit slower, you have more time to react. You can see things better. You can see potential dangers and all of that. So I think definitely speed limits are one thing. And I know when the government launched its Our Journey Towards Vision Zero strategy 2 years ago, speed was one of the things that they looked at. Also, drivers driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and getting penalty points put on people's licences as quickly as possible. Those were the three areas that they identified as immediately having an impact. That was 2 years ago. Doesn't seem to have had a huge impact if we look at the figures that we have
today. But Suzanne, like, would it not make more sense? Because the problem we have at the moment is we don't enforce the laws that we have, be it the speeding, be it modified cars, lowered vehicles that aren't suitable for multiple occupancy, mm-hmm. tinted windows that restrict people's views, use of mobile phones and all that type of stuff. I mean, why not triple the points? Why not triple the points so that you get caught speeding twice, you're off the road for 6 months? Triple the fine. Do you know what I mean? That doesn't mean we have to change every road sign in the country. That's why I don't know. Why would they not look at those things? Because we know penalty points and fines prove things. Why are we going for this review of 100,000 foot of road? I'm not opposed to it, but I'm struggling to see the logic in it, because we've got tools there that we're not actually employing at the moment, and then we're looking at another solution without actually enforcing the solution that exists.
The two things, I think, go hand in hand, because if you're reducing the speed limit, then obviously you're going to catch more people driving over the speed limit if the speed limit has been reduced. And then the penalty points and the fines and everything else come in at that time. It seems like a huge piece of work to review and change the speed limit across the country, but we have to do something because people are losing their lives. So we have to do something. Mm. And my point would be that the government needs to be more ambitious in what it's doing. It's identified three key areas. Yes, fine. But let's go beyond that. Let's look at the condition of roads as well. Are there roads that need calming measures on them? Are there roads that are in such poor condition, or where the camber of the road has eroded?
Well, we can't. We know those areas. We know those areas, and we actually can't get calming measures on them because there's at least 7 or 8 absolute treacherous spots around the county that the locals are screaming out for signage, rumble strips, traffic islands, whatever it might take, and that's not happening. We're not cleaning the drains, so there's water all over the roads. The roads are full of potholes. The hedges are hanging out into the middle of the roads. We're not doing that. So I appreciate exactly what you're saying, Suzanne, that we do need a holistic approach, but we're not going to get a holistic approach. We're just going to get more. We're going to get more traffic signs that look different to the ones that were there before.
Yeah, but that's part of the approach, and that's what I'm saying. This is just one aspect of it. And I suppose if I'm being cynical about it, it looks like something's being done if the traffic, if there are traffic restrictions imposed, if the speed limit is coming
down.
That's
depressing though, isn't it?
Sorry, say
that's
again?
Depressing.
It's more depressing to look at the number of people who've lost their lives on the road.
But it's a way of a responsibility though, Suzanne. I'm not being argumentative. It's just to tease the conversation out, and I value your opinion so much as to why I'm doing it. But will it have that effect? Because that is ultimately what we all want. There's not a person that wasn't touched to the core by the awful tragedies of late. And I want to make sure that it's fully analysed, that these type of measures will do that. Because if we're not sure it will, then we're going to have more lives lost. And we all want the same thing.
I'm not sure I follow that. But I mean, my thinking is if you're reducing the speed limit on a road from 50 to 30, you're going to catch more people doing over 30 miles an hour. And let's face it, all of us, and I would say probably older drivers come into this, we all think we're good drivers. We all think we're safe drivers. And we all think that the rules apply to other people and not us. So if you're reducing the speed limit on a stretch of road from 50 down to 30, you're going to catch more people who are going to have penalty points. And even now, it doesn't take too long to come within the danger zone. You know, a couple of times being caught speeding and you're starting to nudge close to that danger zone. And also the fines and everything like that as well. So I do think that it would have an impact because you're going to be catching more people.
Well, respectfully, though, we see the problem is we're not enforcing the current speed limits. That was the point I was trying to make.
That's a whole other thing, isn't it?
Like, say, for instance, put one camera, and people won't like this, put one camera at Donegal Road, put one camera heading into Donegal Town, and, you know, punish people if they, you can time how long that would take. That's technology that we already have, and you could determine if people were speeding on that stretch, though, of course, people might be turning off. But I'll come back to you, Suzanne, and I think most people would agree with you. I agree with much of what you're saying, but if we're not enforcing 50, are we going to enforce 30? So will we catch more people? And then will we save lives? That's the kind of the point I was trying to get at there. Seamus McDade, will you come in on this one for us as well, please?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you twice this morning, Greg.
I don't like that. Right, but, Eimear. No, I'm only joking. Go ahead.
Suzanne has spoke very well. It's like she is 100% right. Everybody on this conversation, the whole country, would like there to be zero road deaths in the country. So we should all be trying to get to the point where there's nobody killed on the roads. But reducing the speed limits will just result in more people getting penalty points, not less people speeding. Because there is, I mean, the minister has said that this consultation is going on for 2 years. So if he knew 12 months or 18 months ago that this was the solution, why hasn't he reduced the speed limits already? And if he knows now that it's the solution, why is he not doing it tomorrow? Why are we waiting until the second half of 2025 to bring this in? Like, if this is the solution, then do it. I think it is all about enforcement. I would be completely in support of trebling penalty points temporarily for the next 6 months to try to get a handle on this. But there are other ways, and this is just sort of a cheap soundbite that the minister threw out there, that the consultation process isn't even complete yet. So he's obviously just decided, I need to get some good PR because it's been a horrible year on the road, which is just terribly sad for all the people involved. And obviously in this county, we know better than most how harrowing it is. But it doesn't mean that this is going to be the solution. And it requires some more nuanced thought around and some enforcement.
Is it, I don't want to sound cynical and because it's such a serious issue, is it just a happy coincidence that this will have a dramatic effect on our climate damaging outputs?
Eamon Ryan has talked that for a long time about trying to slow it down, and I think they came back and said that wouldn't actually have an impact because people.
Well, he's sure that you drop speeds by 10-20%, you drastically reduce the amount of dangerous fuels and our reliance, of course, on these fuels. But that's a coincidence.
I don't know these statistics, but you'd have to assume as well there's more people on the roads. I mean, deaths are up on last year, but we probably want to look at numbers pre-COVID. And also we are sort of at 100% employment. So the roads are busy. You probably need to see the traffic data versus deaths as well. These are all things that the minister would have access to. So again, if he thinks this is the way to do it, why are we not doing it in the morning? Why are we still talking about this? Do it right now. But if he doesn't really believe it, then you just release the statement now and you do it.
I mean, we do know as well in a crisis situation, we can work on legislation really very quickly. It can be passed in the same day or overnight. So pushing this out to 2025, and you're guessing because they don't know if it's going to be in place by 2025, is not an immediate response to a crisis. Eimear, what's your views on this?
I don't agree with it because I don't think it's going to fix the problem per se. I'm driving 20-something years, and yet my car was rolled off once this year and nearly rolled off again the other day. it's just somebody crossed the white line, came straight at me. You know, and only I left the road, you know, and that's happening. So what is causing that to happen? I think it's mobile phones more so than speed. I think these cameras that they're going to install will be just sitting outside every town and village throughout Ireland, and there'll be easy tickets for people to get. I'd love, and I have no problem with them in if they're going to fix the problem of road deaths, but I don't believe they are, because I don't always believe that speed is the problem. I think things that's going on in cars, maybe people preoccupied with all the stress they have been on. You always see at Christmas time, if you ever notice, you know, when women are stressed out shopping, there's all these accidents in car parks, but they're flying about and running about. And I think people's lives have got maybe that busy, maybe it's tiredness. There's all these stresses that people are under, and mobile phones is more at fault than putting up more road signs.
There's a Go Safe van that's infrequently outside a school in South Donegal, and I don't mind it being there. If you get caught by it, you're going too fast, so it clocks you to make sure you're not doing over 50 past the school. We'll put a camera there all the time, you know, if that's what it takes to make sure a student, and not everyone would agree with that, but I mean, if we're really serious about it, don't have it there infrequently. Let's do something that sorts this out on a long-term basis. And finally, to you, Suzanne, on this one, if I think, communication is often where I think sometimes governments let themselves down. And if I think if they articulated it like you did, where they talked about, you know, the various things that need to be done and articulated it the way you did, I think people might come along with it a little bit more than they are, because the way it is being articulated, it's like it's the silver bullet. But then again, the public kind of know that it's probably not, you see. So they need someone you articulating.
As I started off saying, you know, it needs a holistic approach. I do think that if people are getting penalty points, it would certainly make them stop and think. And I'll out myself now and say I have had penalty points in the past on a certain stretch of road in Derry, which is known as being a bit of a cash cow, because everybody gets caught there because you come off a fast road onto a slow road and there've been rows about it. And it certainly concentrated me and my thinking to say, okay, you got to slow down. You got to slow down here on this park. But I also think there's something else there that we haven't really touched on, and Seamus sort of referred to it there, the number of cars on the road. If we want our roads to be safer, reducing the number of cars would certainly help with that. So where's the rural transport system? Where's the rail system? Where are the frequent and convenient buses? All of those sorts of things. If we are serious about saving lives, reducing the number of road accidents, road deaths, and of course we talk about road deaths, but as Emer said there, you know, she was nearly had her car written off because of somebody who crossed the line. I had a similar experience, as it just so happens, yesterday as well. So if we're reducing the number of cars on the road, that's obviously going to have a positive as well. But I don't think there is one silver bullet that solves it all. I think government needs to look in the round at what can be done. And various changes will bring about an improvement in the situation and move towards that zero that they are looking for. I don't think we'll ever get to zero, obviously not, but we need to get down below.
All that being said, by the time these new speed limits come out, every Tesla driver in Ireland will actually have the ability to drive on full autopilot, which has been working incredibly successfully in America. That's not being factored in either. How many of us in 10 years' time will be physically driving the vehicle? And that's not pie in the sky. Quite literally, Tesla drivers in America are being driven around by their cars. Right, okay, back with more on the next topic from our guests, who I'll introduce again, by the way, for those switching in. We've got Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mart, Suzanne Rogers, a journalist course director at Northwest Regional College, and Seamus McDade, managing director of Football Special. A caller says these speed vans sit just outside the 50-kilometre, an easy catch. They need to sit on the dual carriageway. The road between Manor and Newtown, cars overtake on these roads doing 120 to 140 miles. Kilometres per hour. That's where the speed and danger is, not in and around towns and villages. And the new four lanes coming into Letterkenny, the speed limit there is 50. No one does 50. But the guards did a blitz there about, I don't know how long ago it was now, and I think they did about 20 drivers or something along those lines. And for about 10 days afterwards, everyone was driving at 50, but now again, everyone's back flying up that road. Right, okay, one of the big issues we've been covering over the last couple of weeks, and it's a complex one, it's the issue with young people getting access to CAMHS services, mental health services, long delays. Really, it's all down to posts being vacant. Disability Network Services have sent letters out to parents right across Donegal saying that people have to be prioritised, that there aren't the experts available to deal with children. And parents are very sad, very upset, of course, because they're seeing, in many cases, their children not being brought forward or in some cases regressing. And it's an awful, awful stress and anxiety for the children and for the families involved. It's been described as a crisis and a recruitment crisis as well, as some might see it. But Emer, if I could start with you on this one, Emer McGuinness, this is just one of those areas that they have to come up with a solution on. It's completely unacceptable and there's no end in sight. It looks like it might get worse before it gets better, and it's right across the region, and I'm sure there are pockets around the country experiencing the same as well.
But it shouldn't be. You know, I go back to when my child was, this was about 15 years ago, and I did need them services, and they were there. And I got more than enough help. So what has happened in that time, and what has happened to society in that time, that we've come to this stage, that they're not readily available? And, you know, for them parents that have children, they have enough to deal with on a daily basis and enough stresses that them services should be readily available. So if they are saying that they haven't got the staff in place, why haven't they? I do understand when people qualify, they probably want to go to the bigger hospitals, maybe farther afield, to get gain more experience, to obviously hike up their CVs and get better jobs. And if that's the case, this, I don't see it as a crisis, because I see it as something. Like, we can't fix road deaths because we don't know where the problem is. We can't fix the problem with our water quality because we have to find exactly what the... But we can fix this crisis straight away if we want to. If qualified people in these areas need to be paid a hell of a lot more money to get them into these areas, that is something we can do straight away.
In our digging into this, Emer, what we did find is that you will struggle to find the vacancies that are available in Donegal. If you Google speech therapist vacancies Donegal, you will struggle to find them. There is a very narrow window where they create a panel in February, but they don't hire then. You know, it's almost on an annual basis, so they don't hire in between these panels. They're not actively going into courses in Northern Ireland, for example, and saying, come work with us. This is what we can offer you. We have people
who
are...
not a crisis. It's something that the HSC, that our government can fix straight away if they want, but they are choosing not to do so. So the pressure really, so if it's a crisis and we really need to get behind this, and it should be all over the media, and it's our ministers and TDs that need to be told to go and act and get these places filled. And it could be done tomorrow if they really, you know, the want was there. And that's what the aggravating thing is. It's not like the other, we do have loads of problems we can't fix straight away, but this can be solved if they want. And the drive was there to do it. And, you know, you can only feel for them families. It must be extremely irritating, and it's something they can't fix. And this is where government, and this is what our government, people do often say, what are our politicians, councillors, and what are they, and what is their role? And this is their role, to look after the people in their counties and their constituencies and do whatever they need to do to make their lives easier. Mm-hmm. And this is something that can be done in Donegal, and we should really be putting the pressure on our politicians. That's my view.
Yeah, both government and opposition, because there's no politician, whether they're in government or not, that is not actually running this with this issue. And Suzanne Rogers, I mean, and please talk generally as well. there are just thousands of families, individual families scattered around the place that are dealing with this on a daily basis. They're not united, or there's not a united voice, and it's difficult them for to get united in that way. And sometimes you wonder, surely it's not down to the fact that we know the problem's there, but because it's not really a noisy problem, we don't really have to address it. I would hate to think if that was the situation. But sure, talk to that and the issue more generally, Suzanne, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably an aspect of it, because if you're a parent of a child who needs these kinds of support systems, you're probably very, very busy. Your day is probably full in trying to support your child. And where is the time there to become an activist or to be part of an organisation that are speaking out on behalf of those parents and those children who are being neglected, let's face it, neglected like that. Like you, I did a little search to see about speech and language therapists in Donegal, and I couldn't find any vacancies either. So you've given me the explanation as to why that's there. What kind of occurs to me is we know that where people go to university, where people go for their training, they tend to settle there. And speech and language throughout Ireland is taught in Galway, Limerick, Cork, Trinity College, and Dublin Institute or Dundalk Institute of Technology. And my question is, what's ATU doing? If you
I've a doozy for you here.
Go on.
There are actually students who are studying speech and language in the ATU in Letterkenny, but they offer positions in a different county.
Yeah, you know what's happening there. That shouldn't be happening. People should be encouraged to stay in Donegal and to take up positions in Donegal. And we know that. And I know it from my own children. They've tended to settle where they went to university. That's where they went to. So I think there's that. I think we also need to look at other strategy. I'm interested in CAMHS as well, the mental health services for young people. And it has been proven across the water that if you intervene at an early stage, then you can sort out problems before they young people get to be adults, and that the problems become much more complex. Gordon Brown, when he was Prime Minister, introduced the IAP program in England, and he said you do not have to be a fully qualified clinical psychologist in order to offer help to someone who needs that kind of early talking therapy. You can be an associate psychologist. And that's what he did. And he trained associate psychologists on their way to becoming clinical, and they were able to deal with that. And what it found was that 50% of the people, the young people who were seen, didn't need any other help. They were seen, their issues were dealt with in at a very early stage, and that they didn't need to continue on, and they didn't become part of the adult mental health service then. So, you know, there are those things there that can be sorted out. Yes, parents probably need to be vocal. They shouldn't have to be. And I'm sure they don't have the time in their days to do that. But this is something that needs to be looked at, because all it's doing is it's storing up problems for down the line. And if you have a young person who needs speech and language therapy, what are the odds of them ending up in the CAM situation a few years down the road? Pretty high, I would have thought.
All right. And there's I'll be very curious, and I must dig into this to see if agency staff or, panel replacement staff, or what the phraseology is, if they can be appointed to vacant posts, because I know in teaching they can't, and that's crazy. So teachers, they can't bring in temp staff to cover vacant posts. Can you believe that? So I hope it's not the case in this area.
If somebody is qualified for a job, if somebody is qualified in a particular area, then there should be absolutely no reason why they can't be temporarily moved in.
But
to,
you can't,
to that
in
position.
Teaching, and I wonder if it's the same here, you can't bring temporary staff to cover a vacant post. Yes, maternity leave or whatever it might be, or illness. And I just want to recap on one thing that Suzanne Rogers said. Now, just to recap, Suzanne Rogers is a journalism course director, okay, and an excellent journalist, and has amazing search and research skills. Now, pretend Suzanne Rogers is a language therapist, speech therapist. Suzanne tried to find a vacancy for a speech therapist in Donegal and was unable to do so. Now, we are told by the HSE that they are really trying to work at this fast. They're looking at different ways to do it. But someone who has the skill set to find a position in doing so before this was unable to find that position. So how quickly would you be discouraged to go, well, I'll search Sligo or Mayo or Cork or Galway or wherever it might be? And it's not just that, it's OT in other areas as well. Seamus McDade, Managing Director of Football Special.
Yeah, Greg, this is just a complete dereliction of duty from our public officials. You know, we are saying that we're criticising politicians when they go to the European Union and not standing up for Ireland's interests. Well, I would criticise Donegal politicians not standing up for Donegal's interests. We have a problem in the county here. You have very succinctly showed that the issue is not even being resolved, not even being addressed, because they're not even hiring people. So what are you doing about it? So if you are elected officials, if you're a councillor, if you're a TD, if you work for the HSC, if you work for the civil service, and you're representing Donegal, you are letting these parents down in this role. And it shouldn't take people to take to the streets. Does this suddenly have to become France, where we're all Mario Jeans going out and protesting over every issue that arises? That's why we have elected officials. Go and solve the crisis. I mean, Emer has said it. This crisis can be solved. You and Susanna both tried to find, you know, you've both done your research. The roles are not available. It's simple, but they're not doing it.
They're there, but you can't find them. You can't find them. And then they'll assemble a panel in February, and then no one will know what's happening. And then it'll be another year before these jobs are filled.
Yeah, so like, there's no interest then from them to solve the crisis. It's crisis after crisis. The state have not kept up with the infrastructure of the state as the state has grown. That is their mistake, and that's everybody. And if you're an opposition councillor, an opposition TD, it's the same thing. You're also letting the people going to go down. So go and do something about it.
All right, Seamus McDade, Managing Director of Football Special. Thank you.
Cheers, Greg.
Have a great weekend. It's been great having you on the programme, as it has you, Sinead Rogers, Journalism Course Director at Northwest Regional College. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
And last but certainly not least, Emer McGuinness. Have a great weekend. Thanks, as always. It's always good to have your views, and look after yourself.
You too, Greg.
Bye bye. Okay, take care. Right, that was our Friday panel. Thank you for texting in. Keep the calls and texts coming in. We'll get to some of those after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.